When I pull up to the parking lot, it's time to level up. Dial in, showing out for your team. Listen up, get you some, I stand the fan to give you what you need. Fan fuel, game time, turn up the intensity. Team colors bleeding out, 5-hour energy. For a limited time, get the fan fuel flavor at 5hourenergy.com.
Wake up!
Wake up!
Mike Mulligan, David Haw.
Well, the Bears really need to win a game that they're not expected to win. It would be great if they could show us they understand how to win a game, because we have seen too many examples of them understanding how to lose them.
Don't have to remind Bears fans of a 46-yard try last week. This for the lead from 48. And it's blocked! Second straight blocked field goal for Santos.
Man, that ball bounced off of one of the Bears. The return man, it caromed off his leg.
He knows it's a poor punt. I don't know why DeAndre Carter put himself in that position.
I'm really struggling with this because I really feel like going Mike Florio on it.
I think the Bears are going to beat him on Sunday.
I'm going to have to go with the Vikings. I'll say that they win the game.
29 yards for the win. Good snap. Good hold. Good kick. And the Minnesota Vikings win it in overtime. 30-27.
Start your mornings with Mully and Haw. 5:30 till 10 a.m. on 670 The Score.
Happy Bears Monday.
Shut up.
Let's go.
Mully and Haw, Chicago Sports Radio, 670 The Score. It is. You are listening to a Plumbers 911 Football Monday, presented by Fireplace and Chimney Authority and Busey Bank. But it's a dark football Monday, Mr. David.
Morning, Molly. Yes, it is Monday.
Wow.
It is a short week. Thanksgiving is right around the corner, and the Bears will play again. And yesterday was repetitive.
Yeah.
Redundant.
Mm-hmm.
Somewhat remarkable when you think about how many different ways the Bears now have found to lose a game that they could have conceivably won. And the methods keep changing. And the result is the same. This is a bad football team. This is a struggling football organization. And this is a season that has gotten off the rails.
I find it extraordinary that they scored 11 points in 22 seconds.
I do too.
To get into overtime. But I think ultimately it was so unsatisfactory.
It was the most un-Bear-like comeback. And the most Bear-like ending.
Yes.
Last and play so,
the game. There you go.
As I said, if they could market their misery, they could make a fortune. Because yesterday was just another example of a team that finds ways to self-destruct.
It's a bad team, man. It's a bad team. That's one of the takeaways from this game.
It's a bad team, but you look at the talent, and it shouldn't be this bad.
It shouldn't be this bad.
It shouldn't be 4-7 bad. It shouldn't be five straight losses bad.
No, but you know, when you get a field goal kick blocked to lose a game, and then you come back without altering anything, and you get another one blocked. Who's that on? That is just really awful.
Well,
and their defense that we thought was going to be a top, we were predicting, they're definitely a top 10 defense. Could they be a top 5 defense? No. And I get it. You know, the safety's gone and the best defensive tackle on the roster is out. I understand what's happened. But my goodness gracious, feel free to stop someone at some point.
Well, at the beginning of the season, I think expectations were outsized, as we can say now. And defense has fallen well short of them. I think the season has fallen well short of them.
Mm.
And it's easy to point the finger at the head coach and then his staff and his list of coordinators. One has been fired already. Another one might be on the way. Who knows?
Yeah.
But everybody is culpable here.
Oh, yeah.
From the person who put the roster together to the coaches who were trying to get the most out of the players to the players themselves. I mean, I know what you're saying about the field goal block, but when you have, when you have a group of 11 going to the field the first time since they allowed a blocked field goal, you would think that their awareness would be heightened too. And they'd be able to do whatever they could as players to make sure that that didn't happen again. And yet it did. And so it's just there's nothing about the Bears organization right now, short of the quarterback perhaps, that you feel very good about.
You know, here's the problem. You want to know what the real problem is? Still relatively young in the season. I mean, they
six games left.
They got to turn it around and play on Thursday.
That's not the good news.
Well, I'm saying they're 10.5-point dogs going into Detroit. Mm-hmm. I know Detroit's really good, but man, that is a lot of points.
Well, that's reflective, though, of how little faith there is in the Bears to rebound from something like this.
No,
the resilience might have been all used up in making that comeback. That was crazy to watch. Because of the onside kick factor. You know, onside kicks now, you got to tell the team you're doing it. You tell the world you're doing it. And then you still pull it off? That was one of the more remarkable plays of the game. And then Caleb Williams finds DJ Moore. That was a throw that was one of his best of a good day.
Yeah, he had a good day.
And Caleb Williams, again, puts his team in position late in a game situation. That is now he's starting to develop that reputation for a guy that can do that.
It doesn't translate into wins, sadly. But
it doesn't.
Yes,
it doesn't. But
it can do the special
as a rookie. Rookie quarterbacks typically, the teammates and the team around him try to elevate his play, the rookie quarterback's play. What we've seen, I think, in the last 2 weeks is that, especially yesterday, the rookie quarterback is rising. Is elevating the play of everyone around him.
Yes.
And that's the only good news from yesterday, is that you have evidence of progress at the most important position that always has eluded this franchise. But you have a franchise that is trying to ruin that by not being able to get out of its own way.
No, that's fair. That's a fair assessment of where they're at. Look, we'll go through it and we'll pick it all apart and we'll talk about every aspect of it, but it is, you are banging your head against a wall. And when you watch a game like that, and, you know, I'm doing the post game, so I got to get right on the air. What you need to do is just run out to the garage, open your car door and slam it a few times on your head, because that's what they've done to you. It's so frustrating to watch the way that they lose. It is really difficult to have this furious comeback in 22 seconds and you're sitting there with your jaw agape and then you get a terrible sack and they get the ball and you can't stop anybody. Even when you get a sack, even when Montez Sweat finally gets a sack. And he's frustrated because he didn't cause a fumble.
Well, what happened to the pass rush?
But, yeah, I can't answer that question. But goodness gracious, they converted every time they wanted to. It's so weird when distance doesn't matter. Whether it's 15, 20, 7, doesn't matter. They can convert, and you can't do anything about it. And that's a good football team, man. They played well. And they hung on and won.
Well-coached football team.
It's a well-coached
Vikings.
Football team. No,
they are definitely a well-coached football team with an offensive guru. We'll get into some details later. But this is a team that you look at what they were able to do in running the ball against the Bears. And for the first time since week 3, Aaron Jones had a 100-yard game.
Yeah.
Sam Darnold, I didn't think was the best quarterback on the field, but he did make throws when he needed to. Aaron Jones is a Bears killer.
Yeah.
Jordan Addison had a career day with 162 receiving yards and made some great catches. Not good catches, great catches. And so I think you look at Justin Jefferson, didn't do a lot of damage. Didn't do a lot of damage to the Bears. He was a good decoy. TJ Hockenson was the best TJ on the field. Gotta say, when he went up and made some of those catches, and the Bears were exploited in their pass defense. picked apart surgically by a receiving corps that and a coaching staff that schemed them open. That was a clinic in terms of a passing game. You look at Kevin O'Connell, especially the first play. Well, always the first play of the third quarter coming out of the locker room.
Oh yeah, yeah.
You know, the crosser right in front, right between the safety and the linebacker. The Bears were in their base defense. That play was called in the locker room.
Yes.
And that went on all day. Bears are at a coaching deficit. They're at a talent deficit, but it's not as wide as the other deficits. And you're right. They have six games to go. And it's going to be a long slog. And it already feels like that. Can't remember last time they won a game. I know it was London, but boy, it's a long time ago.
You won a game in London. You flew home. You had a bye week. And you haven't. And you found spectacular ways to lose.
Their mojo never passed through customs.
No.
I mean,
no, they left their mojo on the plane.
They didn't get it. Didn't make the trip back.
And they left it in the little the pack in front where people lose their classes.
Right. And now it's been like taken by some sweet couple from Sweden. I don't know what's happened to it though. Maybe you make up your own. It's ridiculous that they've not been able to win a game since then, and it's ridiculous what one play, the Fail Mary, has done to this season.
Yeah.
And we're going to dissect everything, and I understand who needs to be held responsible. We all know what's going on here, but at some point in time, we have to be at least honest about the fact they've had some terrible luck.
Okay, undoubtedly they've had terrible luck. But like, don't you feel like they, given the 5-game losing streak, that they've already lost Thursday's game?
Yes,
they haven't even been in the building yet, and they got a game plan, and they're going to start installing.
It was a Black Friday special yesterday.
Yeah,
two for one.
It was
get one loss, get one free.
Yeah,
they're no way beating the Lions.
It
might not even be close.
Well,
it might not even be close.
Vegas has a 10 in the hook.
I might be generous.
That's a lot of points.
Lions could cover. Look at the differences between the two teams and how they're coached and how they play and how talented they are. And once the Lions get a lead, you think that Bears team is going to come fighting back after 5 straight losses on Thanksgiving Day? I have a hard time envisioning a close game.
Yeah.
We can make the argument up until Thursday, but I have a hard time seeing that.
I'm glad it's a short week because that's a hard argument to have to make all week.
I don't.
It just is.
It is.
It's just one of these things where I don't know what's going right for.
We're going to take the North and never give it back.
The quarterback's going right.
Yeah,
we're gonna build the team, but not at the line of scrimmage.
It's funny, though, because...
That's the new statement.
It's funny, though, because they got the quarterback, and how many years did we say,
all you need
just get the quarterback? And I understand they...
They did that once before, though. They had a defensive team. They had a good team. All they needed was a quarterback. They brought in Jay Cutler. Then they had to get a tackle. Then they had to get a receiver.
Mm-hmm.
And all of a sudden, they're spending more on offense than they are on defense, and that was reflected.
Well, they need to address the offensive line. They need to address the defensive line. Those
line
are priorities one and 1A in the offseason.
But isn't that
for whoever's
football?
Yeah, well, not always. I mean,
when you're building a football team, don't you want to get the line of scrimmage right? Who's the first guy they signed?
You're saying that from your football value judgment, and I agree with you. And I align with that, but I don't think everybody looks at it that way. Sometimes necessity out of roster, who's available and how much you can afford makes people make choices that may or may not be right. Ryan Poles made some choices. They haven't been right here. He neglected the offense and defensive lines, or he made some bad choices of people who he was counting on there.
You literally, the first signing of your tenure was Larry Ogunjobi,
mm-hmm.
because you knew you had to have the 3 technique to play the system. And then what happened?
Well, he didn't pass his physical and never recovered from that in terms of you went for a replacement and you got Justin Jones, repeat history here, and you were never able to kind of recover from that mistake?
I don't even know. I don't
Is
know
it a mistake?
Well, I mean...
He passed his physical in Pittsburgh. He's been a productive player there, hasn't he? I just, you're right about identifying that as the first kind of miss, if you will.
Well, that was the first guy they signed. We've got to have this. And then you never go back to the well. You never, I mean, well, we don't really need that.
They would argue, only because we've made this point before and we've gotten sort of pushback, but
yeah.
They've argued that Justin Jones was an adequate replacement level player for
adequate.
You're right. Adequate. Okay. And second tier free agent likely on in that free agent class.
Yep.
But the point being, it is the defensive line somewhat neglected there. The offensive line, you made a choice when you drafted a wide receiver at 9 instead of an offensive lineman, or maybe not. Even if you take Roma Dunze, there have been other situations we could point to.
Sure.
That represent that kind of neglect we're talking about. And your third round draft pick being an offensive tackle that has yet to contribute is a big problem. And in the miss right now, miss category. You needed to have that role, that draft pick contribute this year. A third round draft pick
is a high draft pick.
Who should be a contributor as a rookie.
I agree. And I understand. They felt that the player had value because of his injury. But think about the dichotomy of that sense.
Exactly. Well, he's so injured that the other teams will stay away from him.
Yes.
But we know what we're doing.
Well,
so let's draft him because we'll get a value pick. It's like shopping on the clearance rack.
And your big free agent signing trade also on the offensive line was another pre-injured player in Ryan Bates. And, you know, again, the guy had to go to Panama for stem cell treatment.
That's probably not the greatest news when you sign the free agent and you find out that he can't lift his arm above his head.
How do you not know?
But that happened after he got here, though.
Did it?
I don't know.
Because he didn't really play much.
He didn't play much. He hasn't contributed either. And then, I mean, we're talking about Ryan Poles and judgment and moves that didn't pan out. And you can't have any conversation if you're evaluating his tenure without looking at the fact that he stuck with his head coach for year 3 when other better options were available.
Better options.
And that's why, you know, when I was writing yesterday after the game on 670score.com, when we're talking about the list of people who should be held responsible for all this, obviously it's Matt Eberflus. Conceivably, Richard Hightower's in there. We've already seen Shane Waldron get fired. I don't know that you stop with the coaching staff, because I do think that at some point in time, Ryan Poles has some explaining to do.
I wouldn't argue with that, but I do think that, you know, this isn't his head coach. This is, they were interviewing coaches and general managers at the same time. He got the general manager job and then was given a list of 3 guys. So this was his pick of that bunch, of that litter, if you will. A 3-man weave. He didn't get to go out and get his own guy.
He picked the wrong one.
That's not what I'm arguing.
Dan Quinn would have been a better choice in retrospect. He'd done it before. Ryan Poles had never done it before. Who's making the choice? I'm not letting him off the hook like that.
I'm not letting him off the hook. I just think that if you hire the guy and you hand over the keys to the kingdom and you tell him you're supporting him 100%, you got to let him choose a coach.
Mm-hmm.
His own guy. And I'm not saying it'll work. I just feel like, you know, see, the problem is you let him hire a coach, that buys him at least 2 more years. But he's probably on a 5-year deal anyway, so I don't know. I mean, look, he's made mistakes. He's made some good moves too. But this year, everything has come up wrong. There's no way around that. It's just, it doesn't matter what you're doing. It's just come up wrong.
Yeah, I don't know how you look at a season.
You look at Matt Eberflus. Mm-hmm. Why did he keep his job? Why did they give him his job? Because they had to fire the defensive coordinator, and he stepped into that role. And we opened the year talking about him as an elite play caller on defense.
Well, he was.
Well,
I mean, he last
not
year.
Not now.
Yeah, nobody's arguing that. I mean, nobody can say
but,
that now.
I'm just saying, you know, the one thing the guy had going for him seems to be escaping him.
452 yards by the Vikings, 7 Man. Yards per play, Come 6 on. For 13 on third downs. And when you are in overtime, and all you do is you need the ball back. You need one stop, and the Vikings go 10 plays and 68 yards, second and 17, first and 15, first and 20. You need to find a way to get to the quarterback. You need to find a way to stop that offense from clicking, and the Bears never had the answer. So if you could look at big picture, Matt Eberflus kept his job because you could justify it because he was an top-flight off defensive coordinator.
No more.
He's not been this year because of injuries or whatever you want to say, but he's not been this year. Maybe he's doing too much, but the operation is broken. And I don't know if the roster is the roster is flawed. And so combination there of those two things, we have been in this situation before in Chicago.
What it would be like as a player to lose a game like that and then have the coach come into the locker room and tell you how proud he is of you? It's just not, it's all ringing hollow.
Yeah, you know, I think we make a lot about that, and I understand why. I don't know if you're a player in the midst of a five-game losing streak. I'm not sure you care what the coach says.
I think they've tuned him out.
Yeah, I don't know that. I don't know that that's.
But I think you would if that was his message. I don't know, man. It's not working. It's depressing. It's kind of rough to watch. They had this unbelievable comeback late where you're just kind of like, you know, rubbing your eyes. Did I just see that? You know, you can't. The NFL has changed. You can't get an onside kick, man. Was that the first one of the year? That's the first one under the new rules where the
was
ball.
Was that the first one in the NFL?
I'm pretty sure it is.
Yeah, Cairo Santos was due some good luck. Yeah, he definitely was. I had no expectation that was going to work.
None.
And it was like, all right, now what? And they did what they needed to do to put the ball in field goal range. And I thought in overtime, they got the ball. They scored a touchdown. They're going to win the game. And then what? You know, you start to think about all the kind of possibilities. You had written this team off.
Right.
And then.
That's the honey get me rewrite.
This exactly. You should see my first version.
I bet.
Then the 12-yard sack, which is, you know, it's an unforgivable.
Yeah, that was a lapse.
It was a lapse in judgment. Yeah. And he's a rookie, and you're going to make those mistakes. But they would not have been in that situation if he had not made other big plays. So I don't want to give him a pass on that, but I think that, you know, they were unable to overcome that. Vikings get the ball. Hey, how about stopping them? How about stopping them? And they were unable to do that, and everyone saw what happened. Next, you know, a lot of people missed that ending, Molly, because thousands of people flocked to the exits in the fourth quarter because of the expectation that the Bears no way had that kind of comeback in them. And I understand the sentiment. I certainly didn't expect to see it. But a lot of people left and missed a great comeback. 11 points in a minute and a half. Crazy.
Yeah. I mean, again, crazy and glorious. And then it all fell flat.
And then they win the coin flip.
Then they
get
the
ball.
Coin flip. Yeah. They should have deferred. I'm totally.
That would have been classic. Crazy day in the NFL, as usual.
Yeah, no, there was all sorts of stuff going on. The league itself is delivering.
Quick moment.
Please.
We have two high school news updates that are very important to say.
We got two puffy-chested producers this morning.
Oh, actually three. Well, we have three high school news updates. Quickly, congratulations to the York Dukes. They play now in the state final against Loyola. They were victors on Saturday night. Congratulations to Mount Carmel. Was that a blowout, Brandon?
Pretty much.
They beat St. Rita's?
Yes.
They beat St. Rita's? So they're in the state final as well?
Yes.
And congratulations to the North Jets and Blue Jays, my team, who now earned a spot to play in the Class 1A state final.
Wow.
Saturday morning, Lucas Oil Stadium in Indianapolis. I definitely am going to be there. Wouldn't miss it for the world.
Wow.
Brett Lambert and the Blue Jays, well coached. They're ready for this. First time since 1986 they've been in the state finals. This time they finished the job. Go Blue Jays.
And just to put a bow on the whole thing, my high school is defunct.
Bless you.
Yeah, go and be a fisher of men. Mully and Haw, the Pick Six is next on Chicago Sports Radio, 6-7 The Score.
It's Pick Six with Mully and Haw, where we debate the top six sports stories of the day and then open it up to you, the Chicago sports fan. Call us at 312-644-6767, or you can tweet your thoughts at Mully Haw. Pick Six with Mully and Haw starts now.
Did the Bears defense collapse in OT? How do you explain the Vikings converting all three times after facing 2nd-17, 1st-15, 1st-20? Whatever happened to the projected top five defense the Bears started the season with? Is it embarrassing that we once called Matt Eberflus an elite play caller?
Yeah, you know, I think these are all good questions, and I think that the defense collapsed before overtime. So there were a bunch of moments in that game where you could have had a defensive stop. It would have been nice to bail things out when you get a field goal blocked. Stop them. They don't necessarily have to score a touchdown there. What happened to the idea that they could stop people? When you get to the end of the game, you don't have to let them march down the field and put yourself further in a hole. I just think that they've had a really rough run on defense. I think that they're down to their third safety. Obviously, they don't have as good a run stuffer on the defensive line as Andrew Billings is. So it hurts when you lose certain guys, and they've also been pretty beaten up all year long at various positions and guys in and out of the lineup, whatever. But this has been really deflating. This has been really difficult. I guess they say that the pressure ratio is the highest of Montez Sweat of his career. It doesn't feel that way. And he finally broke through and got his first sack since the Redskins game, but just wasn't enough. And he was even mad at himself that he didn't get a strip sack. So, it's just things have loaded up on him. Matt Eberflus was an elite play caller, and he no longer is. And I don't know if it's because the talent level isn't what it was, because they're impacted in different areas. But whatever it is, this defense is just ordinary. They're just an ordinary group. They're not special. They're not stopping people when it matters most.
Well said. They are not stopping people when it matters most, and I think that's the key. Looking back, the Bears gave up an average of 7 yards an offensive play. Beginning of the game, the Vikings were able to run the ball right down their throat. I mean, that opening drive, right? Aaron Jones looked like he was back in a Packer uniform. Yep. Those you know, disastrous games against the Packers all those years, and They couldn't stop him. I mean, they kind of sort of stopped Justin Jefferson with some pass interference calls. But then, of course, Jordan Addison has like a career afternoon. The tight end has a 100-yard game. Those are good players. Those are good players, no doubt about it. But you're right, Mully. Too many times when it mattered, they could not get the stop.
Yeah, this is no longer a defensive football team. I guess it's the best part of their football team in terms of a unit, but it's mediocre because of injuries, attrition, complacency, whatever you want to look at as a reason, you could defend that argument. The Bears are not a team that can rely on its defense to win games any longer. You can't rely on anything after 5 losses in a row. Can't get to the quarterback. You're not creating takeaways. Jonathan Owens had a pretty good takeaway early on at the 1-yard line, or else it could have been worse. And he was deprived of an interception because Jalen Johnson had a pass interference call on him, which he was grabbing the jersey and of Justin Jefferson. So these are the kinds of things you can't do if you want to be a top 10 defense. These are the things the Bears haven't done in recent weeks to deprive them now the right to call themselves that. They're middle of the pack. They're very ordinary, and there's nothing special right now. They're not getting to the quarterback at a rate that scares anybody. And if you think the Vikings and the Packers and the other teams have made the Bears look ordinary, Jared Goff says, just wait.
I'm not talking necessarily about a pick six or something like that.
That's the voice of Brad Biggs. Biggs time, 8:25. Biggs time, 8:25 this morning. What happens now that Matt Eberflus has lost five straight contests for the second time in three seasons, and it's really hard to see another game this team can win? Could you envision the Bears bucking tradition and making a change for the sake of making a change?
Well, it's hard to envision that because the Bears never have, and we cling to that a lot and pointed out. The Bears have never fired coaches in season, and nobody wants to be the guy who says he should be fired. He should lose his job. He should lose his livelihood. But in professional football, you understand some of those realities, and these coaches are paid an exorbitant amount because of that reality. And so if you are evaluating everything head to toe, start to finish, and you are Kevin Warren, who I think has to get involved here, then you throw tradition and convention out the window. That's certainly what he did when he took over the stadium project. If Kevin Warren was not in charge of the stadium project, they would have clung to tradition and convention and probably had shovels in the ground in Arlington Heights. He changed the direction of that project, and I do think, likewise, the similar approach, I'm talking about just philosophical approach to tradition. It shouldn't mean as much as it means when you're talking about a football operation in disarray. So they could certainly justify moving on from Matt Eberflus, and they could certainly do it more quietly, have a little softer of a landing if they did it after Thursday's loss, which could be double digits and embarrassing on national television on Thanksgiving Day. You know how many Thanksgiving dinners they're going to ruin by losing by two touchdowns to the Lions. So Friday is a day that you could envision being the day if the Bears decide to go a different direction. I think that it's very difficult to defend the Matt Eberflus regime right now because of what's happened. Yesterday was the 18th loss in a one-score game, and he's only won 5 of 23. He's 5-18 now in one-score games. Something needs to change, and something needs to change fast.
Isn't that amazing stat you just shared there, David? That is an unbelievable. Now you could say, well, at least he gets the team. No. You got to get the guy that gets you over that hump. This team is so undisciplined, so many errors. We talked about it in the pre-show quick chat we had, and it won't happen. I don't think we're gonna have any breaking news during the show this morning that there's a massive thing happening up at Halas Hall. But if it got bad, David, I think it'd have to be you gave a prediction already. Two touchdown win by the Lions. I think it might have to be three touchdowns or more. I think like the Lions would have to put up like a 50 spot, and it'd have to be like embarrassing in order for something to happen. But maybe that would make your Thanksgiving dinner better. The idea of the Lions scoring 50 points, and that maybe, just maybe, you'd get an early Christmas gift, and the Bears were definitely headed in a new direction.
I'm just looking at the miscellaneous stats. The Bears gave up 7 plays of 20 or more yards in that game, including, wait for this, 69, 45, 41, 34, 29. Are you kidding me? That's what you're doing now?
Chunk plays.
Chunk. Massive chunk. An extraordinary amount. Can you imagine what it's going to look like with their two-headed running backs coming at you? And not even counting what Amon-Ra St. Brown can do, what the quarterback can do. I mean, hell, he could throw 5 picks and still beat the Bears. It is, it's probably going to be very ugly. Someone called us yesterday and asked the question, hey, when the board has a meeting, do they go over any of this stuff? Does anyone on the board, do they ever actually sit there and talk? Do they just kind of, everybody keeps their head down and knows they're not going to fire anyone? Or do they say, hey, wait a minute, like, how much did Nate Davis get paid? We paid off the offense coordinator? Hey, how much do we owe if we get rid of the coach?
Well, we have a new marketing deal with United this month, and so
I just wonder if there's anybody with any say about anything that's happening.
Seems
like no one has any
say.
The
board is
anything.
Not involved in football operations.
No, I'm saying the only people involved, like if George were to get up on the wrong side of the bed, I think he's capable of firing a coach. I think this nonsense that the Bears have never done it before, so they're not going to do it. Maybe try something different. I don't know who's going to take over for the guy, and I don't know. I don't believe they'll do it, but at some point, does anyone sit up and take notice of what the hell is going on here? You can't lose.
Isn't that why they hired a new team president?
Well, that's a really good point.
That's the reason they hired Kevin Warren.
I think the reason they hired him was to get a building up.
Okay.
Because they thought he did so in Minneapolis.
He tells us he can multitask.
Okay.
It's time to start to juggle your responsibilities.
And let me ask you something. If his whole thing is to be a big dreamer and to not build in Arlington Heights, where is he going to end up? What are they going to end up doing? What if they end up just building in Arlington Heights? Is that progress?
Waste a lot of time.
Well, this is my question. Let's see them do something.
That's a tricky question.
That's the guy, DJ Moore. He'll be here at 8 o'clock. Can you believe Cairo Santos has 3 misses this year between 40 and 49 yards this season, and all have been blocked? The 3 block field goals are the most in the NFL this year and the Bears' most in a season since going back to 2012. Where are you with special teams coordinator Richard Hightower and his role in all of that?
Well, I don't want to hear another mea culpa because you didn't make any changes. They had to bring Darnell Wright onto the field goal team because they didn't do anything to fix what was wrong apparently. And the same problem that they noticed in Green Bay was there for Minnesota because they blocked another field. That's 2 weeks running. And I'll tell you what, go back and look at the tape of that field goal. He barely got that 48-yard field goal off. That thing was perilously close to being blocked. So, yeah, I would say someone's got to go back to the drawing board. I don't know that I thought the special teams coordinator was really the problem. But after watching them have a field goal blocked at the end of a game and coming back the next week and having another one blocked pretty much the same way, I'm sorry. That's coaching. That's everybody on the staff. That's the head coach and that's the special teams coordinator and that's everybody. You can't let that happen 3 times in a season. Are you nuts? That's insane. And the fact that it hasn't happened since 2012 tells you who is responsible for that and where are they now? I mean, give me a break. That's insane. You can't have the most blocked field goals. That's no longer like an operation problem. That's a coaching problem.
And that was Matt Pryor, right? Matt Pryor's the one who's not getting low enough or not stepping hard enough or not getting close enough to the center. And then how about the fact, and you know, we weren't on the air, we've been off. The league said, oh, by the way, Packers didn't cheat. Oh, right? Oh, by the way,
you know,
that was a legal play.
I tell you what, we talked about that yesterday. You know, so you have the post game. Oh, no, we were fine with where we kicked it. Then you have the Monday. Well, it was right, you know, we were worried about jumping off sides. It could have been a hold. Then you got Tuesday, they're off. Wednesday, you got the whole we've sent it into the league and we're worried about what happened. Then Thursday, they finally have the special teams coach. We were talking about on Friday, and Friday is when the story came out in the Sun-Times that the league told them, yeah, there's nothing to see here, move along. That's the whole bloody week. You're dealing with the same problem.
Yeah, the league league basically said that they would not have called anything. The league almost like abstained, essentially, and that was a story all week. I don't think it'll be a story all this week. They have an operation issue. I don't know how much of it is the kicker, the snapper, the hold, or the blocking, but it's all a problem. And yeah, it definitely falls under the category coaching.
These are the questions I cannot answer. Right.
That's the voice of Olin Krutz. He's here at 7 a.m. What did you make of the astronomical odds the Bears overcame to force overtime with 11 points in 22 seconds? According to the four-letter network stats and information group, teams trailing by 10 points in the final 30 seconds are now 0 for 1,882. since the start of the century. The Bears were just the second team in that span to force an overtime.
Yeah, those are remarkable numbers. I still don't quite grasp how unlikely it was that they were able to do what they did. And yet, I don't know that you ever felt comfortable that they were going to finish the job. Even when they won the coin flip in overtime, you just figured that this is a team that finds ways to squander opportunity. And yesterday was an opportunity to try to salvage something out of the season, maybe win a game that you shouldn't have, which they haven't really done, and defy the odds. But I think after the Caleb Williams took that 12-yard sack, you started to think, okay, this is not going to end well for everybody. So you just started getting that familiar mental place, which how do you describe something that you've described dozens of times before? The ending was so Bears.
That line, David. The ending was so Bears. That's a great headline. I mean, the ending was so Bears. It was. I mean, the fact that you have to give them credit for getting to that point, right? They did what, but then three and out, Caleb takes an awful sack on the second down. Doesn't ruin his day, but definitely leaves a mark. And then the defense, going back to what we talked about earlier, just can't shut anything down. And they kick an easy field goal, and that's the end of that.
I'm sure I'm the only – and I get it. We'll have someone will call in with the math. But I was stunned when they didn't just take the extra point. They tried to kick the two – or they tried to
we
go
We need
for
to get
two.
Into that. I was not bugged by any play more than that one.
I just don't understand. I guess the math was basically even. But because they did that, they lost the game. Because they came down then and they scored a touchdown, they got the two-point conversion, and they got the bloody onside kick, which was just a miracle from above, and kicked the field goal to force the overtime. And I mean, holy cow, was that incredible that they scored 11 points in 22 seconds. I couldn't believe that that actually worked, and they got the 48-yard field goal, and the whole thing actually worked. Then they win the coin flip. I mean, start adding up the math on all that stuff. How astronomical are those odds that they got in a position where they got the ball in overtime with a chance to, it's just
are they 68 million to one?
I don't think they are. I think Flusie's the only one 68 million to one. It was mind boggling. You didn't like that either.
Yeah, that's a great question.
The 2-point conversion.
Yeah,
we need to get into that later. We need more time because
I don't know.
I know they could, and I tweeted something about it. I got a lot of response from it. I understand the analytics defense of it, but how do you quantify momentum? And that's what the Bears lost. It was the most deflating touchdown drive you could imagine.
Does the defense bow down if they had actually...
It's a lot different scenario. The people that are arguing the analytics, I respect where you're coming from. You can do the math. Football's not math always. Football is a game of feel and instinct and just in the moment. And in the moment, yeah, it felt like they lost something by missing out on the 2-point conversion. Hated it.
What did you think of Nico Horner's answer on trade speculation involving him on Saturday's edition of Inside the Clubhouse?
I care a lot about that. You know, I do want to be here. I want to be here from, you know, the last great team here being traded away through rebuilding and the team improving and going through some challenging years and coming out on, you know, the other side of it here in upcoming years and really taking the next couple steps towards really being dominant year after year. And I believe that's in the works, and I want to be a big part of that, obviously.
Do you think he stays or goes, Nico Horner?
I think he's going to end up going, but not now. The problem is he's hurt. The problem is that they probably would trade him because they don't have a lot of guys to trade. So it makes sense that they trade him if Matt Shaw is ready to come up and be the second baseman. They got a lot of guys that they're going to have to find a place for. And I'm not saying Nico isn't a really good player, but it was surprising to me that he did say that he didn't want to go anywhere and he wanted to stay. I think he's a really good guy, and I think I'd probably keep him. But I think that they can't get rid of the guys they want to get rid of. The corner outfielders have contracts they can't trade. So, unfortunately, he's a guy who could go, and he might have some trade value. And I think they want to get to some of these younger guys.
Well, if he goes now, it's because they're trying to rush up the young guys. But yeah. his trade value couldn't be any worse
right. Because
of the injury. And he might not be ready to play at the beginning of the season. That's still a possibility. So, again, I like Nico Hoerner. He's been a great part of the station. He's a good guy. But now we kind of understand why he didn't have as good of a year as everybody, including him, would have liked him to have because of that injury that he was obviously playing through. Yeah. But I don't think that he's going to be moved unless they are just completely done with the guy and they're just going to give him away.
It'd be bad business to move him now because right. If you have concluded that you want to trade him, which I don't think is the conclusion I would reach, but if they had reached that conclusion because they need to change the makeup or chemistry of this team, he's injured. And injured players are not going to bring you as much in return as if they're healthy and thriving. I think Nico Hoerner coming on the station was great for Bruce and Ryan McGuffey to talk to him on Saturday. He is as much of a consummate pro as you're going to find, and I hope they keep him. He represents everything you want your Cubs players to be. And so I would find another player to trade. I would hold on to Nico Hoerner. He's affordable. He's valuable, and he's good.
And shout out to the Peloton Pounder. He had a couple of really good years here.
Yes, non-tender.
Well, that's an interesting one, too. I mean, that seems cheap, cheap, cheap.
$3 million would have kept him in town.
You're not going to bring Owen Casey up here and sit him, like, just to have him around. So why wouldn't you want him to be your fourth outfielder for $3 million?
Until he re-signs somewhere else, maybe that's an option.
Is that a serious question? I'm not even going to answer that one. Maybe the answer's so obvious.
Maybe he stays in town.
Maybe. That was classic. That was the Indiana head coach there. Did Indiana's loss to Ohio State look bad enough to keep them out of the college football playoff? And who else surprised you in college football over the weekend?
Well, make no mistake. The Indiana loss looked bad at times. They started strong. They fizzled. And they were victims of their own kind of special teams blunders. And those were two big plays that swung the momentum in that game. Ohio State, clearly the more physical, dominant team. And they imposed their will on Indiana in the second half. That said, the things that went on in the SEC over the weekend didn't make this the right year to argue for the SEC getting some breaks and the benefit of the doubt. This is not the strongest year for depth in the SEC. The Big Ten, you now have Indiana with a convincing loss, but it is their only loss. They belong in the 12-team playoff, and I hope that the committee reflects that when they release the rankings tomorrow night. And that's something that is fascinating to consider when you look at the brackets. Indiana visiting Notre Dame in December, first round game, sign me up.
All right, that loss was really bad. They can't cover the punt. They can't catch the punt. The punter went right through his hands. Then all of a sudden, massive chaos ensues. Number 7, Alabama loses. Number 9, Ole Miss loses. Number 14, BYU loses. Number 15, Texas A&M loses. Number 16, Colorado loses. All to unranked teams. All to unranked teams. So all of a sudden, at one point, Indiana was probably on the outside looking in. And now, because of all those losses, they're right back into it. So it was a wild, wild Saturday of college football.
That was exactly what I thought, Dustin. I thought when the game ended, I saw the statistic that the Hoosiers were held to 83 net rushing yards, 68 net passing yards. And that's the first time that a top five AP team was held to so few yards in each of those categories during a regular season game. And I wondered, if that was really problematic for them. And, you know, the SEC has been out there making the argument that they haven't played anybody and they haven't beaten anybody. And then Alabama and Ole Miss go down, Texas A&M goes down. You mentioned BYU. It is unbelievable the chaos that's in college football, and I think that's really good for Indiana. And I think that the issues of the three lost teams in the SEC have now overtaken whether or not the Hoosiers have played a good enough schedule. And I wonder, did you feel, David, that Ohio State was kind of loading up on them, was running up the score
yes.
a little bit? Because
yes, they had
that
to.
Last touchdown,
yeah,
that was the over. So I was wondering if they would score. They didn't go for it. They didn't score it right away. It took a couple of downs. But I was wondering, like, if I'm a gambler and I'm sitting here with the over ticket, I'd be out of my mind right now.
Wow.
And sure enough, they did score the touchdown.
Yeah, I did feel like that was the case. Yeah. I did feel like they were going for style points. And also, the way they reacted to the victory over IU, the players, the quarterback, and some of the gestures.
Yeah.
They took a lot of the pregame hype and talk personally.
Yeah.
And, you know, I guess they can do that when you win games like that. But it was a choice. Indiana belongs, and I think they benefited from the SEC decline. But you're right about Ohio State. They wanted to make a point and drive it in and keep driving it in. So we'll see what happens with the poll on tomorrow night. Notre Dame looked good.
Yeah, man.
Yeah, Army was overmatched.
Poor Army. That's their perfect season. They weren't even in that game. All right, we got the extra point next. It's Mully and Haw, Chicago Sports Radio, 6-7 of the score.
Set up this extra point.
It's time for the extra point with Mully and Haw on 670 the score.
What did you make of Caleb Williams' second game under new OC Thomas Brown? Do you believe the young QB is getting better? What is his performance the highlight of the game? And what is your explanation for his late heroics?
I think there's no doubt that he was the highlight of the game for the Bears. And I think there's no question that he has, for the second week in a row, made progress and made plays when he needed to. And this is a young man developing a reputation for being a clutch quarterback. And by that, I mean we've waited for a long time to see a quarterback in Chicago who was the kind of guy, Dave says it all the time, you're down 10, 4 minutes to go, and do you trust your quarterback to be able to make plays to make the difference? The answer in Chicago now is yes, you do. You have that expectation. Even now, after, you know, a five-game losing streak, and they are where they are at 4-7, but you have the feeling that Caleb Williams is going to be able to be that guy. And you had the feeling yesterday, for one quick moment, when they won the coin flip and got the ball, they were going to win this game because of Caleb Williams. He was a because of guy. He was the guy that was elevating the play of everybody around him, rather than the other way around. It wasn't they were going to win with him or in spite of him. They were going to win because of him. And it's been a while. It's been a while since the Bears as an organization have been able to look forward to that reality each and every Sunday. So I don't know if it's the Thomas Brown effect. I think Caleb talked post-game, was there, and he was describing just how simple the communication was, and maybe them simplifying some of the verbiage and things. Fine. I think that may be the biggest impact. The sequencing of plays isn't necessarily different. His arm talent is obvious. He did the special. And when he does that, that was the only bright spot. But boy, when he plays like that, you have reason for encouragement.
He did do the special, but then he also did the not-so-special. And I'm going back to that sack he took in overtime. Now, he and Thomas Brown, is it Thomas Brown? Is it Thomas Brown's up in the booth? Would that have made a difference for Shane Waldron? There is a connection there, no doubt about it. Short sample size, it's only two games. And I think the next question you have to ask yourself is, if we are moving on from Matt Eberflus, and you're hiring a new head coach, and I'm not suggesting that it should be Thomas Brown to be the head coach, but if you were to bring in an offensive-minded head coach, which I think the majority of people would want, would Caleb go to the Bears and say, hey, let Ben Johnson know, as an example, that I would like to keep Thomas Brown around in some capacity because him and I are really connected and on the same page?
Yeah, it's a lot of speculation. I don't know that they're that symbiotic or if he needs him that much. Maybe you're right. I don't know that. If you have information that no one else has, then you should share it, but it sounds like you're kind of speculating. I got to tell you, that is the special. We saw it again. And his numbers look great by the end of the day. Now, you know, you'd like to see that continue in overtime. That was rough. That was a bad sack. And he took a bad sack. And he's still a young guy, and he's still figuring things out. But I think that he's getting it. He's improving. You know, it's moves and counter moves. And he came in, and he was doing okay. And then he kind of went in a little bit of a slump. But the last couple of games, we've seen a revival of him, and he, yeah, you know, I hated the way that game was sold. This idea that it's the rookie quarterback against the defensive coordinator. Oh, wait to see Brian Flores. He's the king of cover zero blitz, and he's going to play against a rookie quarterback. That should have been the offensive coordinator against the defensive coordinator and the quarterback, one of the guys that is kind of a pawn in that battle. But the way we portrayed it was really Caleb against Brian Flores. And that's kind of an unfair battle, in my opinion. But I couldn't believe how well he did against Brian Flores. I couldn't believe how in control he was and how – you know, they are capable of doing it. I thought that Kevin O'Connell really outcoached Matt Eberflus, especially at the end of that game, because it was play caller against play caller, and it just felt like, you know, they were doing all sorts of good things the minute the Bears were trying to do something else. But I really enjoyed the performance of Caleb Williams, who now hasn't thrown a pick in 5 games. Which I think Dan Weider wrote something about that it's the first time since like 1932 that a quarterback has gone through this kind of a losing streak and not thrown a pick in it, according to Stathead or someone like that. But that's extraordinary. I felt like he was more aggressive in that game. I felt like the arm talent was obvious to everyone. I thought the reaction post game from the Vikings, from Kevin O'Connell, who you know came over and gave him a hug.
That was a long hug.
That was a long talk.
The quarterback whisperer whispered a lot of sweet nothings into Caleb Williams' ear.
He probably told him, "Hey, you know your rookie contract will expire. I'm still going to be here. Just come over."
We'll just exchange one USC quarterback for another.
Yeah, isn't that something? That was really something.
It was, but that's respect.
It was a lot of respect.
Yeah,
good for Caleb. Yeah. Very, very few other things to get pumped up about.
There's very few other things. The passing game did threaten down the field like we had asked it to do, and that's something.
All right, 312-644-6767. We'll be right back with your calls. Mully and Haw on the Score.
The overtime defense was not good enough. You know, we end up getting them 3rd and 10. I got to do a better job there, you know, making the good calls there. And in execution, we got to do a better job. But again, that was not what we wanted. We could win the game right there, you know, on both sides, you know. So we, you know, put ourselves in position there, but end up, you know, getting behind the sticks on offense. But again, punted it away. What a great punt by Torrey. And almost recovered that one. They called him down on that one particular one, and then we just got to operate better. I have to do a better job, you know, setting the defense up for success.
Mully and Haw, Chicago Sports Radio, 6-7 of the Score. That's Matt Eberflus, the head coach of the Bears, and he's got to do a better job setting the team up for success. Okay. Yeah, he said at one point it was everybody had to do a better job.
It's a collective effort, too. And it was a collective failure. He's ultimately responsible as a head coach and play caller on defense, but the defense let the Bears down more than any other aspect of their operation.
Let's get to the phone lines. Chris is downstate. Hey, Chris.
Taking my call. Hey, man, I've been a very staunch supporter of Fields. Never liked Williams from the beginning, but I got to say that that's the end of the field.
You're now a Caleb guy?
I am not a Caleb. I'm never going to be a Caleb guy, but I do feel the Bears have a quarterback. I mean, yesterday you can't deny what you saw yesterday. That was impressive. A couple of other points I had is I like Brown. I think you make him the head coach. He reminds me of Tomlin in just his demeanor and the way that he goes about his business. There's a lot of first-time head coaches that people haven't heard of, like Tomlin, that end up being successes. And lastly, the defense is regressed. I'd sure like to see another Caleb in our backfield named Caleb Downs. So, thanks, guys.
Okay, Chris, thank you.
Thanks, Chris. Appreciate the phone call. Yeah, I think that Thomas Brown is – done well in 2 weeks as a play caller. I would slow down on the
tap the brakes on the comparisons
to a guy that's a Super Bowl winning coach and one of the best coaches in the NFL the last 15 years. That's just in out of respect for Mike Tomlin as much as anything.
Yeah, exactly. It's a tough one.
And you know, Caleb Williams, I'm not sure why you would hesitate now to embrace what he offers.
Well, I think he was saying that after watching Caleb, he's no longer upset about the Fields camp. Yes.
I get that.
There were a lot of people that did not want to see a change, but now that they've seen one, he's reconsidered and he thinks that that Caleb Williams is a better.
There have been ups and downs this rookie year, like a lot of rookies. But
he'll never be a Caleb guy.
That's what I mean. It's like he'll never be a Caleb guy, even if he's the reason you eventually do win the division and get to the playoffs.
I think he'll come around.
People will come around.
Yeah.
And I think yesterday we saw the potential that exists for everyone. If they could just get the line of scrimmages controlled, they've got the weapons on offense, and they've got the quarterback finally.
Yeah, I think that's fair. And I mean, I like what I've seen from Caleb Williams. I really thought he went through a little bit of adversity, and he's coming out the other end of it. It's not over. There's still going to be issues and problems, but I generally speaking, I really appreciate how hard he's worked and how he's kind of made an adjustment.
And he's got six games left to continue to make those adjustments.
Yep. And
improve.
Hopefully they can win a few of them. All right. We got Olin Krutz will join us next. It's Mully and Haw on the Score.